This is Out and About on Peoria Public Radio. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Jen Gordon with Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Today we're talking with Scott Kanoff, the chair of Bradley University's theater department. He's here to tell us more about their upcoming production, of which he is also the director, entitled She Kills Monsters. Scott, welcome back to Out and About.
Thanks. Always good to be here.
So before we get into this very, very unique story, tell us a little bit about the scope of this project. I understand it's quite a big undertaking.
It's a large production for us, and it's an abundant one. It's a very generously demanding play. This is a full semester project for our whole department. So everybody is on board, every student, every faculty member, every technician, every staff member. And the play is just really big in scope, tells a big story with a lot of big theater tools.
Mm. We should say that the play, She Kills Monsters, it's on one level, it's kind of a romp through some of the tropes of nerd culture. But at the same time, there's a very serious emotional story about a young woman coming to terms with the death of her sister.
That's absolutely right. She's Agnes Evans, the protagonist, is looking for a release from her grief at the death 2 years earlier of her parents and sister. And she's trying to move on with her life with her boyfriend and to move out of the old family home, but she's stuck. And in packing her late sister's room, she comes upon a notebook, which is a D&D module, a plan for a D&D adventure, a game. And she finds a geek in a game store who knows what it is and informs her that her sister was a famous dungeon master in the local Dungeons and Dragons community in their town of Athens, Ohio. And he's very impressed that she's the sister of Tilly Evans. So she asks him to teach her how to play the game so that she can play this particular adventure. And in the course of playing the game, she is drawn into the world of Dungeons and Dragons, and she encounters her sister and the fictional characters that her sister has created based on her own little circle of geeky friends in real life.
And for people who are not acquainted with the world of Dungeons and Dragons, can you tell us a little bit more about the role of the master, the Dungeon and Dragon master?
Well, you know, I knew very little about the game before we embarked on the project. So we started rehearsals with 3 nights of Dungeons and Dragons gameplay. We had a couple of alums who were local dungeon masters. And the dungeon master conducts the game, draws up the character sheets, guides the story along, and dungeon masters range from kind of bland to super, super engaged actors who act out everything. They provide voices and characters, and they keep the story moving along. They essentially compose the stories, although D&D also has, you can buy pre-made stories as well. But the dungeon master keeps the game going. He's sort of the coach and kind of the player coach of the game.
You know, and the game itself can be very improvisatory, and it can be, depending on the wishes of the players, it can be a performance for
like
a lot of people.
One who knows. it very much so. I think game players really judge each other on how committed they are to what they're doing, how committed they are to their invention and their sense of commitment to their characters. And the play doesn't go heavily into the lore and the arcana of the game. It relies on some pretty well-known and accessible devices and characters and ideas. So you don't need to be a D&D freak to appreciate the play, because the main character, Agnes, knows nothing about it. So as she learns, we learn too.
So then you mentioned that Agnes encounters Tilly inside this world as the master?
No, the dungeon master is a kid named Chuck from the local game store. But once they begin to play, she discovers that her sister wrote herself into the game as the team leader. She's what's called a 20th level paladin, which is quite an evolved soldier. And so Tilly's the leader of this team, and she gets Agnes to join, and they set off on a quest for the lost soul of Athens.
Well, and it sounds like one of the challenges of this play is that it takes place in 2 different locations. One of them, the real world that Agnes inhabits, but then you cross-cut to the fantasy world in which the adventure is taking place.
Exactly, exactly. And there are a lot of quick cuts. It's written in a very cinematic way. But you learn enough about Agnes's life on the outside to appreciate that as she goes through this adventure, she's having her own coming of age. And the shifts back and forth are part of the charm of the play, how we get in and out. And the machinery of all that is goofy and very presentational, so we don't try to hide some of the workings of that. So some of the devices and some of the creatures that come on are not introduced with cinematic illusion, but with the machinery of the theater. So it's a lot of fun.
One of the cool platforms that the theater does provide is fight choreography, and I understand that this has quite a few fight sequences.
We have about 12 or 13 choreographed fight sequences in the play. We use a variety of fighting styles and weapons, ranging from wrestling and hand-to-hand to the final fights based on Chinese opera style. And our fight choreographer, Justin Verstraet, was a Bradley alum around 2008, and he's come down to choreograph a number of our shows, but this one really shows off his skill and his knowledge. He's a brilliant fight choreographer. He's a young director and choreographer up in Chicago, and he's been down every week. In fact, two out of our five rehearsals a week are devoted to fights. We had Friday night fight night, in fact, and we've been working since the end of August on the show. We started rehearsals the first day of class. Mm. We also started building the show the first day of classes, and it's taken us 10 weeks and the full semester.
Obviously, the fight sequences and their complexity are one of the things that made this a complicated production to undertake. But, what else went into the making of this? What makes it such a big production?
Well, the transitions from world to world demand a lot of spiffy lighting and sound, creating two different worlds, creating a world that is as richly imagined as the world of Dungeons and Dragons. Takes a lot of stuff. I mean, I suppose you could do the play in a little black box with an iPhone to play music. I mean, I'm sure there have been intimate small productions of this play. In fact, I know there have. For us, we try to maximize the learning opportunities with every production, and we have specific learning goals for each production that we do. Some shows are smaller, some shows are bigger. Sometimes we do a musical, and in this case, we had the opportunity for our students to learn about fabricating creature costumes, working with special materials, silicones, and different kinds of stiffening agents and things like that, a whole range of costumery. The sound design is enormous, and we have a very gifted sound design student, Sierra Conrad, and we brought in a professional sound designer from Chicago to work with her. Mm. And similarly, the light plot is very complicated. We use a lot of intelligent lighting, which we call it, which is programmed computerized lighting with special effects. And so our lighting students are assisting Chad Lowell, who's our scenic and lighting designer, on all of that. So this was like a Titanic full of opportunities to learn for our students. And now and then we do that with every show, but sometimes we really pull out all the stops, and we decided this would be a great semester project.
Had any of your students heard about this show prior to it being announced?
Yeah, it's very popular. A lot of them knew it. We have a very young cast, mostly sophomores, a few first semester juniors, and a lot of them know this play from high school or friends who were in college who had done it. So they were very excited. They were almost as excited about this as they would be about doing a musical. So I think in some ways more excited.
And I have to ask, because the only reason that I know anything about Dungeons and Dragons is because of the Netflix Stranger Things series that came out. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's been kind of a resurgence of interest in this particular show because of that correlation?
I think so. I was reading the other day about a resurgence. I mean, this game sort of came of age in the mid-80s and late 80s and exploded in the 90s when all the country was worried about all sorts of things that they attributed to the pernicious effects of Dungeons & Dragons gameplay. And it's had, I think, a lot of resurgence in the last 4 or 5 years. I think it's become popular again. And I didn't know how many cells there are around Peoria. Mm. And once you meet one or two folks that are really involved in this, you realize that. I went to a game store the other night, and there are 20 tables in the back, and they're all playing. Each table's its own D&D game going on. So it's very popular. And I think D&D got a bad rap because it calls for a lot of creativity and collaboration and camaraderie and commitment, and the people who play are too busy inventing and having fun to be going out doing evil things.
We've been talking with Scott Canoff about Bradley University Theater's production of She Kills Monsters. The show runs this weekend and next, with performances continuing through Sunday, November 18th. Scott, thank you for being with us, and break a leg.
Thanks so much.
And the Contemporary Arts Center is currently presenting the work of artist Glenn Davies in an exhibit entitled Glenn Davies, Babel. The body of work focuses on early influences from the Chicago Imagists and the artist's employment as a sideshow banner artist. It includes themes of spiritual conflict and journeys towards enlightenment.
And the Peoria Riverfront Museum and public television station WTVP are co-hosting a screening of the documentary Won't You Be My Neighbor? It's a behind-the-scenes look at Fred Rogers and the impact his television program had on generations of young viewers. That is tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the Peoria Riverfront Museum.
Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
You can learn more about Peoria Public Radio at our website, peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.